You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
A lifestyle. Sports cards and we live now. Jeremy Lee in the building and every guest that you ever needed. Sports cards after hours keep the hobby heated. Updates, hobby talk like you never seen it. Sports cards live and I could ever beat it. Sports cards is a lifestyle. Sports cards and we live now.
Welcome to another episode of Sports Cards Live with your host, Jeremy Lee.
All right, here we go. Welcome, everybody. Episode number 208 of Sports Cards Live. It is Saturday night, December the 16th, 2023. My name is Jeremy Lee. I would like to thank everybody who tuned in last time where we did a Just Jeremy, Just Me episode. A lot of fun. They always are. We'll try and do those once every couple months or so. Next Saturday, our guest on the show is Stephen Ho. He's got a great collection. He's been on before. We'll be welcoming Stephen back on the show tomorrow night on the channel. Josh Madigan from the Hockey Cards Gong Show joins me for our weekly PWCC Hockey Auction Watch Party. And on Monday night, Michael Hathaway from MC Sports Cards joins me for our weekly MC Mondays live show. Both are always a ton of fun, educational, and lots of action as well. Please join close to 500,000 people who have downloaded the Center Stage app on both iOS and Android for quick comps and card management features. Their app is the fastest and most accurate at card shows or at home to help you price your cards. You can build, organize, share your collection with your friends and find other collectors to follow using their social sharing features. Marketplace features are coming soon. Check out their Instagram account and please join me in supporting the great team and the innovation that they are undertaking at Center Stage. Also, use protection, practice safe swaps. VeriSwap is an app and middleman service that lets you securely trade your cards through the mail. Every transaction up to $1 million in value is fully insured by their guarantee. Check them out on iOS and Android. VeriSwap is now live in Canada and will be opening a Canadian hub very soon. They're offering $50 in free trade credit to anybody who uploads 10 hockey cards to their account. There is a referral link in the video description. I also want to shout out hobbynewsdaily.com. Check them out for daily hobby content. And I want to thank all partners, sponsors, and of course, loyal viewers and listeners for your ongoing support. If you're not yet subscribed to the YouTube channel or the podcast, please take a moment and do so. And also, for the very first time tonight, Sports Cards Live is live streaming to Instagram. I don't know how it's going over there. I cannot see comments coming in from Instagram, but happy to be doing that for the first time tonight. All right, let's get to tonight's guest. He started in the hobby in 1988 when his grandparents, who would normally buy him a chocolate bar, bought him a pack of 1987-88 Opeachy hockey because he was enamored with that wax wrapper design. He's been active on Instagram since the beginning of the pandemic and started working at Mint Inc., an LCS in Toronto, in January 2023. His favorite teams are the St. Louis Blues and the Tampa Bay Rays. His favorite athletes of all time, Patrick Waugh, Vladislav Tretiak, Eddie Olczyk, Shane Corson, Jordan Binnington, and MMA fighters Andre Orlovsky, Clay Guida, and the Korean Zombie. Originally and currently hailing from Toronto, Ontario, Let's bring him out. Eitan Shapiro, the Sports Card Cartel. Welcome to Sports Cards Live. How you doing, buddy?
Jeremy, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. I can hear you well. Yeah.
I had you hanging on a cliffhanger there, cartel style. I've got something for you, just for you, Jeremy, on this amazing, grandiose occasion. And it goes a little something like this. With the mint ink lid, don't give me no mega bid. Rocking with Jeremy Lee, the hobby MC. Have no fear. The cartel is here.
Welcome to Sports Cards Live, the cartel. It's good to have you. I mean, listen, you and I, we've known each other for a couple of years. We both set up at the Toronto Expo. You came to my networking event at the show this past November with our buddy Josh. And listen, it's good to have you on the show. I got to admit though, when I check out your story posts, they're so cryptic. I don't know that I'm interpreting your story posts the way you want them to be. Tell us a little bit about your approach to Instagram to kick this off. Now we're going to get into your hobby history a bit.
Well, that's definitely a part of the cartel allure is the weird subversive and subliminal messages that I put out there. And of course you're very astute. So you noticed that. A big part of what I do on Instagram, anybody that knows me knows I'm not a big fan of social media. You won't find me on very many platforms, but Instagram is appealing because of the visual element. And what I also like about it is the audio element. A lot of people get at me regarding my musical selections. This is why I ask people to put on headphones to enhance their cartel experience. I'm out there to put out information in an entertaining way. I like to tread some of the paths that are a little bit more niche to let people feel welcome in that sense and feel like they've got someone that is also into some of the smaller sports or some of the professional wrestling elements or other parts of the pop culture. You and I are both big collectors in that sense. So that's mostly what I'm trying to put out there just get people enjoying something a little different, thinking about it, dropping DMs, asking questions, or noticing something. I enjoy that. I very much enjoy that.
Right on. Right on. All right. So we're going to go to some comments. Welcome everybody to the show. Jake Dahl, Phil is here. What's going on? The professor. Dan says, a nice shirt to me. And I noticed Mitch here says, is this the first ever episode that I'm not wearing a t-shirt? I don't know if it is. I was at a holiday party this evening and I was like, we ran out of there, came home, put the kid to bed. And here I am. I didn't even have time to change my shirt. Greg, snazzy shirt. Thank you guys for noticing. I do appreciate that. Chris, what's going on? Jerry, good to see you. Al, thanks for letting me know that the feed on Instagram is working again. First time we've ever streamed live to Instagram. And by the way, I assume that we as a hobby community are going to start to see more and more of that as Instagram just enabled this like 2 days ago. So this is going to, I think we'll start to see more and more of this. And I plan to stream all my stuff onto Instagram as well. Like, why not, right? Great community over on Instagram. Mike Double V, what's going on? 90s hockey, hobby champs. I guess my question is, why is Cartel no longer with Coach Co? I mean, hey, people move on and do other things. I don't know if we'll get into that, but maybe we will. Mike, you bet. Slab City, welcome to the show. And Name is here as well. Eitan, let's jump in. I want to hear about, you told me the other day that you were one of the first sellers on eBay. Take us back, like for people that maybe weren't around in like the, 97, 98, 99, what do you remember from those days and what did it mean for you and continuing on now, building your hobby presence? What did being an early eBayer lead to for you?
By the way, Jeremy, I got to say, this is also very professional. The cartel is very impressed. I'm used to such substandard forms of communication. And I didn't know we were doing this Instagram thing for the first time. That's amazing. This is a milestone. And that's huge because Sports Cards Live is huge. Jeremy is huge. Jeremy, the interviewer who has been given so much praise by interviewers who right now are running unbelievably popular podcasts. I'm sure you know what I'm referring to there, Jeremy. You get kudos from the best of the best. So it's an honor to be here. Now, if I can remember what it is you just asked me, it had something to do
with eBay.
It had something to do with eBay. When you get me going on this, I get going on it. I generally don't talk about it too much because it certainly dates me. But I am an eBay trailblazer in the truest sense of the word. I like to tell people that my early purchasing, when it came to taking this a little bit beyond just a hobby, the buy, the sell, a bit more of a business. I bought a lot of slabs from a lot of early sellers, and people that were there at that time will remember luminaries such as Keith Olbermann selling a lot of sports cards. It was very early in a slab craze. The only thing you can really compare it to is what we're going through right now. I'm talking about the late 90s. And it literally was the Wild West. You could purchase used underwear from guys and girls on the eBay platform rather readily. Not that the cartel went there. I'm just letting you know what was on there. And there was a lot of competition in bidding. And also this concept that you had to trust in the process, because money orders and checks were getting mailed back and forth through Canada and the United States. Literally, my first sale was a money order that I received. So it was literally an education in banking payments and transactions. And a lot of people talk about how kids are getting into it these days and hopefully doing the right things and having a bit of an education in business that way. But it literally was, it was wild, because everything that we're seeing now, I'm so used to. People will be saying, well, certainly wasn't like this 6-7 years ago, but it was like this back in the late 90s. There was hot and heavy bidding on Mark McGwire slabbed rookie cards. There was hot and heavy reactions to Sammy Sosa's big season. There was prospecting going on. People were paying big money for prospects that were coming out in mass-produced sets as rookie cards. But we're talking about a very big era in baseball, and it was reflected on eBay. eBay was very lucky to be up and running in that era, and it just took off as the biggest platform, and I kind of got to watch it happen. So I have a great perspective on eBay, and I actually have this love-hate relationship with it. I do love it. There's so much I hate these days about, you know, fees. Nobody likes fees. I don't have that much bad to say. The naysayers of eBay these days, I remind them, you can control your experience. Okay. The 90% of what I do is buy it now, best offer. You can set requirements for bidders, right? People sometimes don't know this and they get a bad experience, right? And people tend to talk about the bad experiences. The cartel shows up on those threads and defends eBay, because I do have an affinity for this amazing platform that changed the game.
Yeah.
Brought us to where we are today.
Tons of eyeballs on there for sure. I learned this recently, that eBay got its biggest sort of push at the beginning from Beanie Babies. And I think that, you know, that's great. But I think it's like collectibles, sports cards, among some other things, that really carried it through some of those earlier years. And here we are today, and it's an absolute beast. Of course, I like Dan's Vintage here, says Instagram is going to expect a fancy shirt now for every show. They're not going to get it, Dan, but I appreciate that. Chrissy, sellers are also unreasonable. Listing for $20 or best offer, non-auction gets an offer at $15, then seller gets offended. Yeah, I mean, hey, everybody's different, right? We it's hard to put your expectations on other people. MSG, welcome to the show. Chris, 90s hockey, oh, the money order era. Yeah, lots of people making comments, like James Fertitta. I used to send cash in an envelope back in the day. Yeah, imagining money orders today. Hobby Champs remembers receiving checks for eBay sales, even cash. He started there in 04. Bobby Burrell, the good old days of 80 watchers and 40 bids on items in the early eBay years. Yes. Jerry Hotch, proud member since 98. Hockey cardboard got $500 cash in the mail. Very few people send cash in the mail anymore. Greg Cohn, I remember the old days of eBay business when I had my store in the mid to late 90s, Turbo Lister. That's right. And MSG bought his first hockey card in 99. Yeah, a long time ago. It's crazy what eBay has really done to really connect the hobby. And I think that a lot of that, Eitan, has to also gave rise to grading, because now all of a sudden you're buying cards from people across the world, sight unseen. Who's going to trust a seller to tell you what condition it is in? And that's what really, I believe, blew up the grading part of our industry. Let's move on.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Instagram. Obviously, Instagram is a big community for the hobby. It's really grown in the past 5 or so years. When and why did you start your Instagram account?
By the way, I came this close to putting on a blazer, Jeremy, and we would have just been the spiffiest of all time. It's almost like I anticipated you were going to be gussied up for the cartel. This is all for you. And it's better than a bathrobe. That also was in the mix. At a certain point, the bathrobe was in the mix. But there's always a danger of the bathrobe opening. Remind me again where we were at, Jeremy.
Instagram. I just want to know, like, you know, you we talked about it a bit earlier, how you approach your story posts. But tell us how we've heard now about how eBay helped you grow to where you are today. How is Instagram? When did you join Instagram? And how has it helped you build your hobby persona, your hobby experience?
I was dragged kicking and screaming into Instagram, very resistant, as I am to most new technology and trends out there. Cartel's kind of stuck in 1996, sort of. Again, I instantly saw the value in it, and I had enough people in my life telling me you have to do this. It's a visual platform that makes sense for cards and collectibles. A lot of people that visit the Casa de la Cartel notice that it is almost like a museum full of collectibles and interesting artifacts, all sorts of oddball items. And I was inspired by several accounts that I was sort of following before I did anything major. I wanted to kind of get a feel for what I wanted to do and how to do it by following some of those accounts. So I didn't just want to look at cards. I didn't want to see the typical. There are some beautiful, I mean, MSG is here with us. He runs a beautiful feed where he features cards, you know, individually and with amazing backdrops and fantastic production value that Cartel cannot comprehend with his 1990s brain. It's just not there yet. But I wanted to also incorporate that, the fact that, you know, I was becoming an old man that had missed out on how to truly use this technology. And I love music, like, a lot. I have a huge record collection. I am a huge, as big of a music nerd as I am a collectibles nerd. And it was just being able to fuse that, have fun with it. I was having a lot of trouble with the way that we locked down in Canada mentally. This was something that helped a lot. Not only was I connecting with the local community, I was, again, bringing it back to MSG, he's out in California. I was connecting with people all over the world. And a lot of early content, your show, I'm going to say it, the card porn page itself made it interesting and exciting. And then the last piece of it all, other than, you know, having something to do during the pandemic and enjoying showing off items and sharing music with people, you know, in addition to that, it was almost feeling a responsibility to get some information out, let people be privy to an eye that was critical in a healthy way, maybe sometimes not so healthy. I will cop to some of my early, some of my early overstepping. I will cop to that. But I wanted to give people information and help them because there were so many new people entering the hobby. It's the hobby that I love. I feel like you also know this. We have a responsibility as OGs to help people out when it comes to navigating what is actually a really complicated network system of a hobby. And to this day, and through the new digs, I continue to do that and make that a priority.
Before we get into the new digs, and I want to hear more about that, I want to get your thoughts and your personal experiences, just a little bit of how it's helped you, you know, develop yourself again in the hobby, but setting up at card shows. I remember I knew you through, really, I knew you just through Instagram. And then I remember coming to your booth right beside Josh at the expo. And we chatted, and it was nice to see you and shake hands for the first time. And, you know, and since then we've been friends. How has setting up at shows, what do you like about it? Any like kind of non-conventional advice you would want to give people? Do you encourage setting up at shows? How has it helped you? Just speak a little bit about setting up at shows, if you don't mind.
I mean, shows themselves, such an important part of the experience in a community builder. That said, just the idea of, look, what are we doing? We're essentially running pop-up shops, you and I are, right? And you take your show on the road. You're all over North America doing that. And when I was a kid, it was like garage sales, right? And from there, a lot of the local businesses, when I was growing up, I would help them set up like at mall shows. And I just loved it. I loved the fast pace, all the people coming through, the wheeling and dealing, people bringing things in, just talking shop, it, like we're doing right now, is such a big element in all of this. It's definitely now taken on even more of an impact these days, post-pandemic era, because everything's growing, everything's so much bigger. I mean, it is so much bigger. If you and I are thinking back to even 2015, I like to think back to the 2015 show where they were debuting Series 1. And we thought that was big. And I mean, we've doubled from there, I would think. And well, each show seems to be bigger and bigger.
And I even can remember when the double rookie class in 05-06 came out in hockey with Crosby and Ovechkin, and how pumped up the room was back then. That's 10 years before the 15-16 year, which is, of course, the McDavid year for those that don't know. So it's like the hobby kind of goes in these waves that followed these generational players when they come out. And now, of course, we've gotten hockey at least, and we're talking about the Expo in Toronto, which is easily the second biggest show in the world. And maybe the, you know, some would argue the best show, because, you know, I know some people that come up from this stage to the Expo, and they think it's their favorite show overall. But listen, I'm a little biased. I call it my home show, because it's, you know, it's not in my backyard. It's a 4-hour plane ride away for me. Right. But it's still, you know, my home country, at least. I do love it. And I hear what you're saying, that, you know, it's even back in 15, it wasn't nearly as big as it is now. Obviously, the hobby's grown over the last 5 years quite a bit. But I'm with you. It's an integral part of the experience of being a hobbyist. And when I've in the past seen people say, you know, you don't need to go to shows. Well, no, you don't need to. Of course you don't. But you're missing out if you don't. And I encourage that people go to shows, regional, national, international, whatever it is, you're gonna do a lot of what some of these comments I'm gonna read in a moment speaking to Instagram, but they apply to going to shows as well. So let's get to some of those, and then we'll go on to our next topic. Jeff McMahon, welcome to the show. Matt says, you know, happy holidays, Eitan. It was a pleasure to talk with you about 90s inserts, cards, AH. It's a slog to find positivity in the hobby sometimes. So appreciate what you both do. And here, MSG says, the journey of Instagram was fun. I found myself following pages of 90s hockey cards, and after hockey card pages kept popping up, my girlfriend had me create my own page and logo. That's great. But this is the comment right here. Instantly made awesome connections all over North America, Australia, which was simply amazing. You make these connections online. You also make them in person. And Eitan, I got to tell you, I can know you through Instagram because of your cartel brand and some DMs and maybe some back and forth in the comments. But until you meet somebody in person, you don't take it to that next level. And that's when the relationships, you know, you shake hands for the first time. That's so much better to me than just DMs on social media. So that's why I think social media is great, but being in person, meeting each other, even better. Matthew here says the IG has been wonderful in helping us connect like-minded collectors. No doubt about it, for sure. I don't know what this means. Jay says, is this part of the Iron Curtain surrounding the hobby, the gatekeep? I don't know what Jay means about that. Do you?
We could talk about it. I mean, I'm assuming by gatekeeper, he's referring very specifically to something a quote-unquote hobby influencer mentioned, in terms of, it's kind of like what I mentioned earlier, the responsibility of helping usher in, you know, new entrants and expose them to a certain type of information, which is going to depend on the individual, right? Now, the Iron Curtain part, I'm not sure. Maybe they're talking about some sort of elitism. I'm not sure. It's maybe the concept of trying to keep the hobby difficult and mystical versus being just very open about it. And I think most people, that's what they want to see, rather than trying to make it seem exclusive. I'm assuming that's what they were talking about. But you know, what I was going to follow up on in terms of what you're talking about with the connections, right? It's meeting the individual people. You are excellent at this. I mean, you've organized these get togethers at the expo for the past few years now. And you're excellent at giving attention to every individual and meeting people. You prioritize that. That's amazing. The cartel, it's a little difficult. The cartel is very manic. Anyone who's seen me at a show, I am going 1,000 miles an hour. I'm running on caffeine and all sorts of other stuff that you may not know about. You might not want to know about. You might not want your kids to know about when I'm dealing with them. But I'm always putting forth the best effort, the best face. I got to admit, like, you know, there's a lot of DMs. There's meeting a lot of people. The wider I cast my net of stories, like you mentioned, of obscurity, the wider I cast that net, the more people I'm bringing in. And unfortunately, I fail many times at, you know, recognizing people or being able to put one, two and two together. It's something I really want to work on. I hope people aren't hard on the cartel when I seem like I'm being ditzy, although there is a bit of a ditzy element to me, but it's difficult, becomes difficult. You seem to manage it very well. That's inspirational to me. And also don't forget the content, like your content and certain other content. There's one page in particular that just so emphasized collecting and got me to think to myself during the pandemic, hey, what am I doing with this money? Because I keep wanting to do this thing that everyone's doing. I don't want to do it. What I really want to do is get a Gene Simmons rookie card in the highest grade possible. And that's what I did. And I'm proud of some of the moves I made at a time when things were crazy and there was so much competition. Other people wanted that Gene Simmons card that wouldn't have wanted it 10 years ago or 5 years ago, or maybe even right now. But I found the content inspirational too from people. Right. And like, you know, I became such good friends with Electric Cards that I entered some of his breaks, and I'm generally not a break guy. I'm all about the fact that breaks are necessary and important, actually, in the hobby at this point. But during the pandemic, it was a new concept. And a guy managed to get me, you know, going with something that I was initially backing away from. And it was a good experience. So it was amazing. It was an amazing time period for, like you said, meeting people, making those connections, like MSG mentioned. This might as well be like Jeremy Lee, the cartel, and MSG collectibles, apparently. But just wanted to expand on that and talk about, you know, the content and the community.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Lots of good stuff there. It is a really good community. And, you know, back to that gatekeeping comment, I think that where that comment that JH, and welcome to the show, Jay, says, is this part of the Iron Curtain surrounding the hobby, the gatekeeper? First of all, I don't think there is an Iron Curtain surrounding the hobby. I don't know if there are or are not gatekeepers. I know that I try to be inclusive and, you know, welcome anybody who wants to be in the hobby to it. That's kind of been, I don't know, something that I think is important that we do if we want to see this hobby grow and continue to be a going concern for all of us and others. So, you know, be inclusive, you know, with people. If you know, if you're at a local trade night or you're at a card show or whatever, and there's somebody standing by themselves, there's somebody just kind of on their own who maybe they have some social anxiety, like just mosey on up to them and ask to look at their cards. Like just talk to people, make them feel like they're part of the community, because that's one thing that this hobby has that a lot of people can't find anywhere else, which is camaraderie, because we all have sports cards in common. As much as we may not agree with each other, even like each other, that's fine. But people who are maybe a bit more reclusive, more introverted, like, say hi to them. Well, you know, welcome them into the hobby. Deep Value Investor says, I'm wearing sunglasses next time. This guy is great. Very good. Stick With Sam says, hello to the cartel.
Sam.
Cards AH, I appreciate the comment that the hobby is complex and intricate. There's so much to learn and understand, and sometimes I think there's not enough support to help people enter the hobby safely. And that's why you have to pick and choose what content you're consuming, podcasts you're listening to, YouTube channels you are subscribing to. And, you know, just learn by experience, I would say. Mitch says, as an American, I take one expo over two nationals. Mitch loves the expo for sure. And here, MSG is calling out several people. Not calling out. I don't mean it like that. I mean, just mentioning a few people that they have met through the hobby. And I think that's awesome. Signed and Slabbed, who was a guest on the show just a few weeks ago. I met Cartel on IG. Then I met him in person. And yeah, turns out we're twins. When you guys met in person, Eitan, was that at the National just this past year? Because I remember if it was, I then saw you both at that one networking event on the Saturday night. And I think we all took a picture together and I got to meet you maybe early on when you first met Mr. Signed and Slabbed.
Yeah, we rocked out at the casino. Signed and Slabbed was a part of a conglomerate, I like to call it, because I just associate these gentlemen with one another. I was lucky enough to have breakfast with them. And at the same time, be across from Pancake Analytics eating pancakes. This was a huge 2023 highlight, I will tell you that. Signed and Slabbed. We met for the first time at the National. It was awesome. That's a great example of like speaking to someone for such a long period of time, feeling like they're as much of a friend as someone who's in your city. And then you finally meet them, right? So that was awesome. He's a great guy. He's also a wealth of knowledge. Just quickly getting back, I might be remiss, Jeremy, if I don't talk a little bit more about this gatekeeper concept. And again, if I'm understanding what this gentleman said, I don't know if he was accusing us of being gatekeepers or something, but there are people that kind of self-proclaim themselves. They do. And oftentimes, and especially lately, a lot of the bigger names, when I say bigger names, you know, these are people with large followings, whether they be organic. I'm proud of my organic following. You very much have an organic following as well, Jeremy. Whether they're organic or otherwise, they have a large following. They suddenly have a lot of influence, quote unquote, in that sense. And like I said, it's about the way that they're presenting the information, how they're presenting the information. Cartel, very early on in my Instagram journey, I was very much a pushback individual, which is to say highly critical, keeping an eye out for any instances where people drop the ball, because I took it so personally. I took it so personally that, you know, we were in a state, and it was a state of flux for the hobby. If we have eras, we just went through a massive era where our hobby grew, which is great for the most part. But it opened the door to a lot of misbehavior, I'll call it. We've all been through it. I don't need to start, you know, going through each individual thing. I did find, however, that suddenly became like a cottage industry in the hobby, pushing back. And channels were popping up just to push back. You know what I'm talking about, Jeremy. I've appeared on some of these channels. I got a following with some of these people. I'm now on the outs with some of these people because it got so over the top and ridiculous and negative that it goes out the other end. You're suddenly now questioning everything. MSG put up a bunch of names there. You know, I think, again, this, I'm not just picking on this person. It's just that he mentioned the name. But Mama Breaks is a wonderful individual. I've had nothing but good interactions with her on Instagram. She seems lovely. When it got to the point where people started finding issues with her and just digging for it, and it wasn't obvious on the surface, I said to myself, I'm hanging out with the wrong group. Or not necessarily hanging out with, but being followed by the wrong group. It's about recognizing and showing off the good in the hobby and really talking about it and putting it out there front and center. But it's also about being aware. And when I say being aware, that doesn't mean going out and picking on every little thing. coming up with a theory on everything, you know, like this, this such and such has a loaded box. When we're talking about a hobby that has a lot of randomization involved in it, on a shop level, I see the things happen that people say can only happen one way. People make these proclamations. So it's like I said, that's the summary, is to be aware of that sort of thing. Talk about it when it's appropriate. I'm going to say some things people don't like to hear, or they may not have known, or I'm reminding you, like there's a run of Connor McDavid Future Watch autograph rookie cards by a certain grading company that rhymes with Keck It. Keck It, I don't know what that is, but there's a whole run of those cards that are slabbed and have been known to be trimmed, right? Like, and if you start picking on this thing and talking about it over and over again, I mean, it becomes a very negative thing for all of us, because like something that kind of sullies the whole thing. But the fact is, that's an outlier. So we got to focus on the good, put it out in front, and be aware of certain things. If people ask questions, I want to be honest about it. But I want to be less about getting on every little thing, trying to find things. There's so many, like, you know, it would be great if someone put together a reel, not only of all the bad things that happened — they shouldn't do that anyway, but if they want to, go for it. I mean, there are entities out there that do that. But how about putting a reel out of all the misconceptions, the assumptions, and the things that were not as they seemed? Because there's a lot of those as well. I don't have to start listing those either. But people will never cop to that. They don't want to go back to that, but I've seen it, because the cartel as an organization, I'm keeping an eye out, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, listen, I hear what you're saying. And I think, I like to highlight the positive in the hobby, but by that, I just mean the people, like the people that are in the hobby, that enjoy it for what it is. And at the same time, you know, if you're aware of a run of certain cards that are maybe trimmed, it is important to let people know about them so that they're not left holding the bag. I want to go to a couple more comments, and then Leighton Sheldon from Vintage Breaks and Just Collect is going to join us for the Vintage Spotlight, which we do every Saturday night on the show. He's in the green room right now. Leighton, we'll bring you out in just a minute. Thank you for being here. Phil says there's a group of people who now look forward to Jack Astor's. That's where I hold my networking event at the Thursday Night Expo. Twice a year, in person, all the way, is a great way to do it. Hockey Cards Hangover says card shows are the most important part of our journey as hobbyists. I think that's an interesting comment. I'm not going to disagree with it. I see Leighton's nodding his head in the back too. Jerry says there's so many different areas in the hobby. How can anyone claim to be a gatekeeper for everyone? And what I want to add to that comment is that our social media world, our Instagram community, the YouTube community, the Twitter community, as large as they are, they're not the whole hobby. Some people seem to think that the whole hobby lives on Instagram. Trust us when we tell you it does not. And I just know this from talking to people who are not on Instagram. There's plenty of people who are not on social media as much as we are, as much as some of us are. Jay says we were in a pump era. Now we are in a dump era. Great for buying. I mean, yeah, cards are cheaper now than they've been in several years. So it is definitely a good time to be buying relative to the past, but we cannot comment on what the future will hold. Phil wants to hear Cartel's opinion on some WWF e-cards. We will get to that a little bit later. Phil, Bobby Burrell, many of my best friends today are people I've met in the hobby from the 90s to today. Same here, Bobby. That's a wonderful thing. Bobby's among them. I mean, Bobby is someone that I used to think, Bobby's like this guy. He's written the books. He knows all about the vintage. Maybe one day I'll get to meet him. And now, like, you know, I consider Bobby a friend, which is, that's what the hobby does for you. I'm seeing these interesting notifications I've never seen before from Twitter saying people are joining. So anyone who's watching on Twitter, welcome to Sports Cards Live on Twitter. Appreciate having you. And again, we are live on Instagram for the very first time ever here on Sports Cards Live. A Collector's Dream Orlando, welcome to the show. Good to have you. And with that, let's bring out Leighton Sheldon for the Vintage Spotlight segment. Leighton, welcome to the show. Please meet Eitan. Eitan, please meet Leighton. How are you, Leighton?
Good. Thanks for having me, Jeremy. Nice to meet you, Eitan.
Nice to meet you too, Leighton. I'm sorry I don't have a poem for you as well, but maybe next time I'll have a poem prepared for you.
At least by the spring expo, that'll be good enough. I'll be up there.
Absolutely. There you go.
Eitan came with a poem for me, Leighton, and I got to tell you, he made me blush. All right, guys, welcome to the Vintage Spotlight segment with Leighton Sheldon, Just Collect Vintage Breaks. Check out his podcast, Trading Card Therapy. The doctor is in, as he likes to say, not to be confused with Trading Card Therapist, completely different podcast. I just say that to be clear. Leighton, welcome to the show. And let's start off with this. I always ask our guest to come with a question for Leighton. Leighton, you consider yourself a professional baseball card treasure hunter. That's what I let our guests know. And with that, I asked Eitan to come with a question for you. Eitan, please lay your question on to Leighton.
I love that, by the way. I love that. What are we doing? We are pursuing treasures, especially in the overall collectibles realm. Jeremy is a treasure hunter, but if you are the baseball card hunter, you are the Mandalorian of baseball cards. I took a look. It's inspiring to me, actually. And I'm sure we're going to get back to Mint Ink at some point, Jeremy. But, you know, a big part of what I have started doing with them and will be doing a lot of in 2024 is getting out there and actually hunting down vintage collections. I mean, any collection, but we are kind of focusing on vintage in that sense. Leighton is obviously already doing the thing and successfully. This may be kind of for you. I don't know. This might be kind of a blasé question. But I love talking about grading, especially lately, because it's a conversation that keeps coming up. It comes up at shows. It comes up at the shop. As you are doing transaction and noticing, you know, 90% of what you're dealing with are in these plastic encasements, it comes up a lot. So I've got an opinion on something. And before I even get into it, I want your opinion on it. So as someone who deals with vintage stuff, it's very important to get it graded, not only for grading purposes, but authentication, right? Protection, you know, verifying things. How do you feel the grading companies are dealing with vintage? And when I say vintage, obviously, you know, it's funny. Someone told me vintage is now 80s. And, you know, I felt extremely old, obviously, but I also kind of laughed at it. Because in my mind, we're still talking mass production. But anyway, we're all old guys. What are we going to do? I would say like 69 and before. I just like to say 69. I'm going to say it again, 69. But before 69, that to me is probably what we're talking about when we say vintage. How do you feel grading companies, I just did a bunch of grading when it comes to 50s and 60s, are handling vintage cards in the post-pandemic era? Are you noticing anything or am I making something out of nothing? And then I also want to know how you feel about the fact that AI grading is a concept now that we've sort of we've dove into as a hobby. Will that be relevant? Because one would think it should be a bit more of a human touch with vintage stuff, but will it be relevant? How can it be relevant? How can it fit in? There you go.
Well, I appreciate you, coming to the show with some questions. And as far as your own treasure hunting goes, I wish you the best of luck and I'll see you out on the battlefield. joking aside, Eitan, so as far as grading and my own personal experience, and you brought up, you showed some slabs just a minute ago. So as much as I handle a lot of graded cards, I really do handle probably even more ungraded. And so I feel like the question you're asking is a good one for me because I grade a lot of vintage cards, mainly for full transparency here, mainly with PSA and SGC. I have used some other services as well. And just to kind of get right to the point, I feel... And Nat, if you're listening, I'm happy to have a discussion with you, but you can look at my orders from PSA. You know what the scoop is. I feel that on high-end vintage, PSA has been, I'll say it like this, conservative. And the grading has been tight. And I feel that when I grade a vintage card with SGC, at least of late, of the higher end or even middle of the road, it is a little bit more consistent. And as someone who's going out and buying ungraded, I'm sure that all the folks who are listening to your show today can appreciate, all I really want is to be able to predict accurately so that if I buy a 1963 Topps Pete Rose and I think it's a 5, that it doesn't come back a 2. And to be fair, I'm also not expecting a 7. So that is what I think is going on with vintage grading, with at least the two major companies that I deal with. And as far as AI goes, I hope that it works. I don't know much about AI, and I don't want to pretend that I do. I understand, I've heard, you know, I'm familiar with Scott, who's in charge of the training at PSA and their program there. I've heard some of the rumblings, of course, at TAG, at Jeremy's company, about AI. And in general, I'm all for it. And folks sometimes are surprised. And for me, it's very simple. I want people to understand when they sell me cards what they have, and when people want to buy cards from me, I also want them to understand what they have. So to me, if you can get rid of some of that ambiguity and that uncertainty in the marketplace, I ultimately think it's going to be better for everybody, the end user, the consumer, the investor, the dealer, and it's going to make the entire card ecosystem better.
Right. So I just want to say you confirmed my thoughts. You really did.
Let me just interject quickly, because you mentioned TAG and you mentioned AI. I want to make, for anybody listening, I just want to clarify that TAG does not use AI. TAG is uses.
I didn't realize that, Jeremy.
Oh, yeah. And it's a common misconception. I just want to take the opportunity to clear it up with you in the audience. TAG uses what TAG refers to as automated grading versus AI grading. So I can't speak to what AI is going to bring to the hobby as far as grading either, but I can, you know, have a better idea about what automated grading, computerized, automated, whatever you want to call it that way, grading does bring. So, you know, AI is a whole other beast, is my understanding. I'm no expert when it comes to AI. We have the professor in the chat, and the professor works in AI in his day-to-day. So, you know, follow the professor on Instagram to maybe learn a little bit more about that. Just a couple of quick comments here. Dan here says that he absolutely 100% agrees with Layton and SGC's consistency. David signed and slabbed. SGC was far more consistent, especially with pre-war in the green flip era, than PSA was. Good to hear they're still consistent now. To me, that's the most important thing when it comes to grading, is consistency. And unfortunately, I haven't seen that to date. That's what I love about TAG grading, is it's you know, consistent. That's the biggest thing that it brings. Well, I won't say it that way. That is something that TAG certainly brings to the table. But TAG doesn't do vintage, and we're talking about vintage right now. So let's go now to Layton. Layton, did you happen to come with any question you had for Eitan, for myself, anything, or if not, anything that you wanted to talk about from a vintage perspective?
Well, the first thing I wanted to ask Eitan really was about, you know, it seems like you've been in the hobby for a while, and I've, you know, always enjoyed the expo. And I think, you know, Jeremy kind of sent me a little bit about your bio. You've kind of been, you know, involved in a lot of different things with cards. And I'm just curious, purely from what I do and love for both work as well as, you know, I'm hoping to get some great things out of these treasure hunts for my collection. What's the coolest or the best collection you've ever had walk into your store that you've worked at, a shop that you've either just been at, meaning you didn't work there, or a convention that you were either at, working at the table, etc.? Because I always love to hear those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It gets me thinking, when you think of the amount of years and the amount of events and incidents, if they are an incident, there's a lot to rifle through. But there's a lot there. And a lot of what I saw and experienced, particularly in the mid to late 90s, is the stuff that's very mythological. And I like that as a cartel, because never forget, the cartel is an organization steeped in tradition and history and with eyes all over to stay on top of the prize. Now, I actually worked, when I say worked, I was a young kid helping out at several stores in the United States during certain summers. I was there when a near complete set of the first Imperial Tobacco hockey card set, which for me as a kid at the time, by the way, was like the unearthing of like the Holy Grail, or like some of those, like, you know, like an Indiana Jones type of treasure trove that didn't seem real until you had it in front of you. The way that it was acquired was unfortunate. I think that, again, if you think back to the 90s, guys, it was kind of a Wild West in the hobby scene. There was this boom. People became aware of cards because of things like the Griffey or in our neck of the woods, the Brett Hull rookie card. Mm. But people started realizing there was some value, and individuals without a lot of knowledge started selling their cards. And again, I was just a kid at the time. I was not involved in the transaction, but the person who gave up that collection was elderly, and it did not go well. And quite frankly, that helped me gain perspective on the hobby as a young kid. But anyways, it got into the hands of a store. We can talk about ethics till we're blue in the face, but it fit the ethics of the time, I suppose. The individual did receive some money, but the reality is that the collection, which again was a near set, gorgeous, they actually went into GAI slabs at the time. I don't know if you guys remember.
No, GAI. I know GAI, sure.
Before there was an HGA in the pandemic era, there was a GAI in the first slab era. And it popped up in a lot of digests and collectors magazines, and it was amazing to be able to flip through them and be in their presence. As of late, working at the Mint Ink shop, we are putting more of an emphasis. A lot of people bring in individual cards. They want to do small deals, small trades, etc. And they also weren't aware that vintage is something that, a card shop in the GTA would be interested in. You don't see it in the display cases. You just don't. We had a guy bring in a collection from spanning the 60s to the 80s, all OPG, but not just hockey. There was baseball included. And
I love OPG baseball, sure.
I'm sure Leighton knows, 60s OPG baseball is not everywhere. There was a Nolan Ryan rookie card. And it was fantastic. The gentleman was, it was a collection by a collector. And I love seeing those because it was carefully curated. Not all curators come to Canada and talk smack about our beloved expo. Some curators curate excellent collections intelligently. He kept the majority of it in binders. We came to a fair deal where everyone was happy. We took on a lot of work taking on a collection like that. It was about sorting through it, figuring out what was worth grading, figuring out what sets were worth keeping. Those old WHA sets, Jeremy, those don't pop up complete. We had great success with those. A lot of people thought that was just like, so you happen to get some extra WHA sets. No. That was some of our best success. And it was a ton of fun. I love collections like that. I love seeing it curated highly and loved. I would say those are that's the most recent one. And then, of course, that Imperial Tobacco experience was an old school one.
I appreciate you sharing me. You're tugging at my heartstrings there. I love vintage OPG baseball. I certainly know how tough and difficult it is to not only just find, but certainly to find in high grade. So I appreciate you sharing.
Well, listen, I have for you a 5-row mega box full of a lot of the quote unquote base/commons that are, as I call them, creamy and crispy, available at the Mint Ink shop. If you ever want to take a flip through, I've had some people make offers, and Leighton would appreciate. I'm not about to give up a 5-row of OPG baseball cards for a couple $100, but yeah.
Well, we'll try to work something out. I like that.
There we go.
You're going to have to make your way up to Toronto, Leighton. Maybe for the next expo. Are you coming up to the next expo?
It's already on my calendar. I've already cleared, the runway. It doesn't matter if I plane, train, or automobile. I'm getting there, Jeremy.
Oh, that's awesome. Make sure you're there on Thursday. Come to my my networking event Thursday night.
Make sure I'm there for that.
Yeah, you got to be there for sure. All right. Well, hey, this was great. Great conversation between the two of you on the Vintage Spotlight segment, Saturday night's regular appearance by Leighton Sheldon, Vintage Breaks and Just Collect, his podcast, Trading Card Therapy. Leighton, anything you'd like to mention before you hop off?
So Jeremy, just clarify with me, next Saturday, are we going to do a show with it being, Christmas weekend? I didn't know if you're going to do that.
Good question. The answer is yes. It is the next Saturday is the 23rd. We have a show booked. Yeah, I have a guest booked and everything.
Great. So I'm just going to say this. It's the holiday season at my parents' house. I'm feeling very nostalgic. This is all where my baseball card love started. So what I'd like to do, we'll talk about it more, Jeremy, how to promote it. But it's very simple. I'm going to give away $500 to my Just Collect store. So it's personal. It's not, you know, through Vintage Breaks. It's really not even through Just Collect. It's going to be me personally giving it. We're going to give this to one member of the community. And what they're going to be able to do, Jeremy, is they're going to be able to take $500 and they can use it towards any cards they want. So if they want to buy one graded card, great. If they want to buy a few cards, great. If they want to use that $500 to something a little bit more expensive, I'd be happy to oblige. But really, I'm just very appreciative and grateful that really after graduating college in 2000, when a baseball card industry certainly didn't exist the way it does today, that I'm able to, quote unquote, make a living doing this. Very happy to be here on the show, Jeremy. Awesome to meet you, Eitan, and looking forward to next Saturday. So if you want a chance to win, Jeremy, we could talk about it, but it's the least I could do for a community that I love.
Yeah, that's as Mike Double V says, very generous, Leighton. And before you go, I just want to mention, because we've got people watching on Instagram, we got people watching on Twitter, and I just want to let everybody know, if you want to be able to win that prize, that gift prize, whatever you want to call it, that Leighton just put up, you're going to have to watch on YouTube or on Facebook. This show streams to the Facebook page and the Facebook group because the comments will have to come in. You will enter during the episode of Sports Cards Live next Saturday night, and your comment will be your entry. That's the way we do giveaways here on the show. So be sure to come to the YouTube channel next Saturday to win during the Vintage Spotlight segment. Our guest is a gentleman by the name of Stephen Ho, and Leighton will join us at his usual time. Leighton, thanks so much. That was news to me, and I'm really grateful that you're offering that to our audience here. And that's wonderful. So thank you. Have a great week leading up to the Christmas weekend. And we'll talk to you this week.
Absolutely. Happy holidays, everybody.
Thanks, Leighton.
And Jeremy, I want to say that offer is void amongst cartels and organized crime and also Quebec.
Yeah, not eligible in the province of Quebec, which is not true.
Sorry, Quebec. No, Montreal, not even.
Not even. It will be, though. It will be, but that's pretty funny. Okay, there's some comments I want to get to, but first I wanted to we're going to do the comments first, and then we're going to talk about what about Mint Ink and your experiences there and what Mint Ink is all about. Chris C here said, cards went up too fast, too quickly. The hobby needed a gradual rise over time. It's a great time now, and collectors will benefit. I agree with that. I agree with everything that that Chris C said right there. Bobby, you agree?
Absolutely. Chris C knows what he's talking about. That's a nice little summation, actually.
Yeah. Bobby says, PSA has so many more graders today. The law of averages makes for more inconsistencies. And I think that that's reasonable. And us as a hobby just have to understand and be cognizant of these effects of growth. Simple. And decentralization as they open up more offices. Colin Murray says, PSA is overgrading. I feel that it is making it difficult to sell. He's pivoting to SGC. Interesting. Hobby Champs, I believe vintage is technically around 30 years. So plus 30 years ago at the minimum. I think the trading card hobby, we need to adapt an era terminology that our instinct to use the term vintage to only describe. Yeah, it's going to be hard to find consensus on that. You said, I heard what you said, Eitan, and to me, I consider vintage, for me at least, up to 89. I'm not putting that on anybody else. I consider 80s vintage because it's just like the packs, the gum, the format of distribution was the same in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. And then the 90s, you've got foil wraps, and you've got new paper stock, and you've got holograms. But listen, we don't need to get into that debate.
But wait, but Jeremy, let's use our big hobby brains and come up with a system like they have in comic books, where they have a golden age, a silver age, a bronze age, and a modern age. I'm sure we can find qualifiers.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy. I agree with Hobby Champs, and I agree with you, and I would like to find something other than just vintage, modern, ultra modern, because vintage is a moving target. And well, they're all moving targets, actually. Tim Larson, good to see you, Tim. Been a while, says, collect what makes you happy. I have a large group of sports cards and memorabilia, comic books, vintage signs, and old beer cans. I'm surrounded by them, and they all make me smile. Enjoy the ride. Great advice right there for sure. David throws out the term pre-war to even predate vintage, which I think makes a lot of sense. Okay, Mint Inc., Eitan. Mint Inc. is a LCS in the Toronto area. Tell us, when did you start working there? Why? How did you get the job? Take us through your journey to being there and what you're doing at the store now, what the experience has been like.
Well, I will do just that, Jeremy, but just a real quick response to Dave there. Dave, you are indeed my twin, but if we were to categorize one another, you would be pre-war, buddy. Now, anyway, let's talk a little bit, and I'm post-war, if you know what I mean. So Mint Inc. Is a trading card operation here in Ontario, multiple locations. I have an amazing origin story that I'd like to share right now. It may embarrass some people, but it's incredibly entertaining, so I'm going to go for it. But the way things started with Cartel and Mint Inc. Was rocky. I had decided to take a long walk one day. It was, I think, just post-lockdown, I'm pretty sure, from what I can recall. You know, the last few years have been very hazy, Jeremy. Everything melts into itself. I decided to take a walk, and I was almost kind of making a little jab and having a little light fun with a pattern I saw emerging amongst my friends on IG, where people were taking long walks for exercise, which I think is great, fantastic. As you know, Jeremy, I'm also a personal trainer, but they were doing this thing where they were all competing and how long they were walking and that sort of thing. So I was like, hey, the Cartel doesn't always have to deadlift or squat. I'll go for a walk. And on a walk, I decided I was going to visit a store that I'd not visited before, despite it being fairly close to me. And I made sure to check Google, make sure they're open. And I was ready to, you know, report on anything that I found, anything that I purchased, and plaster that, you know, on my Instagram feed. But unfortunately, when I got there, I couldn't get there because there was no one at the store. And, you know, the lockdown and a variety of other things made Cartel a very testy boy at the time. All work and no play was making me feel like Jack Torrance. But I very, hot-headedly went to town on Mint Inc. for being closed when they claimed they were open. Now, I found out later on it was for more than a good reason that they happened to be closed for a small period of time, that the Cartel happened to be walking by. And of course, any rational, sane human being would stop and consider that instead of turning their phone on and having fun with it and deriding someone set to their favorite music tunes, you know? But that's what I did. And a man by the name of Johnny risked it all when he caught wind. He was having dinner with the wife. So our man, Johnny, risked it all and contacted me directly. He did not express any anger. He was not on the defensive or the offensive. He simply told me he wanted to spend some time talking with me. In that era of Instagram communication, where people are all over one another, all over companies, Tops did this, Upper Deck did this, PSA grades too slow, they grade too fast. This person, I'm going to punch him in the face, and that person, you know, insert comments on facial hair or something. If it wasn't one thing, it was another thing. Everyone was on edge. Here was this guy, calm in the fire. And I'd really not experienced anything like that in terms of the communication at the time. Blew me away. I was very impressed. When I did eventually meet with John, they brought me into the store and opened up what seemed like a secret passageway. Like, I don't know if you've ever gone to like a washroom at a club in downtown Toronto. They're like exposed brick and very sketchy. You just hope you're going to get out in one piece. And they take me down there. And Johnny is a proud Italian fellow. And so are many of his friends. And I was being taken down into a cellar by these Italian gentlemen. And he told me to take a seat.
I just want to talk to you, he says.
Yeah, we just want to talk. Have a seat. Have a seat over there, as Chris Hansen says. We all took a seat. And what did Johnny do? Did he go off? Did he go into a rambling explanation? As an employee, John knows I'm prone to that sometimes. I'll go into a rambling explanation when I don't need to. No, he did none of that. He basically, if I'm going to boil it down, asked me what they could do better and for information. And instantly, I was drawn to not only being a customer. I mean, I'm a customer at a lot of different stores. I had also recently, by the way, I didn't mention in the story, I'd had a bad experience in Miami, Florida, with a group of young men. It's not about hobby negativity, but I was fresh off of that. And the thing that Mint Inc. shared in common with that organization was a very slick marketing exterior, which is very impressive, by the way, and comes from a lot of hard work. I don't know if you've ever heard the Mint Inc. songs that John produced. They're fantastic. It's amazing hip hop. I'm a hip hop head. Anyone who follows my IG knows I'm all over the place with music, but I love old school hip hop. So does John. They're amazing. I just am really impressed. The extra mile they go with the marketing and the brand. So that was kind of a connection that had a negative connotation at the time for me. One conversation is all it took. A couple of proposals. A few more discussions, and the next thing I knew is I was involved in the organization. I'm involved on many different levels. I'm kind of more than anything at the moment a manager. I make sure the downtown Toronto gallery/shop is well maintained and running at full power. And it was amazing. As I'm sure you know, I found myself working with what I love for people that I respected and I like what they're doing. And beyond the passion, they actually have big, big goals. They have big plans. And that's very exciting. There's a lot of stagnation, not so much with Mint Inc. So that's the origin story. And at this point, I get a lot of experience on the storefront level. At our Davenport location downtown. And that's relatively new to me. I've helped out at stores before. This is kind of a bit of a higher level. There's a lot of personal ownership I take in terms of the store itself. It's a different aspect of the hobby, right? There's collecting, investing, buy and sell, this, that, and the other thing. But now, you know, running a store and being involved in an organization that has all these different departments trying to make things work, a lot of moving parts. It's still in process. It's getting better every day. It's a relatively new company at the end of the day. And it's exciting.
Let me ask you this quick. So you're managing, you're responsible for one of the stores. Are you, you know, you mentioned you're also a personal trainer. Are you still a personal trainer? Do you still have clients there? And are you full-time at Mint Inc.? Are you 40 hours a week type of thing plus at Mint Inc.?
You know, they were incredibly accommodating in terms of the transition. Don't forget, you know, the personal training industry took a huge hit during the pandemic in terms of being able to see people in person. You know, I remember I was on another podcast, Jeremy, not yours, where, you know, people made some judgments about me in terms of being a personal trainer because I'm not really a meathead. But I'm a very hands-on strength and conditioning coach. I did strength and conditioning for some very high-level athletes. I don't need to toot my own horn. But it was very much hands-on. So this concept of, hey, don't worry about it. You can do it online. You can Zoom with your clients. It was brutal for me. It's just not what I do. I do have a few clients that mean the world to me that I've been seeing for so long that it makes sense to carry on. But I mean, that's 1/50th of the schedule that I had. I very much committed to Mint Inc. at that point, and they were so very accommodating when it came to transitioning.